This is a podcast from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, a nonpartisan research institute that explores budget policies and issues affecting low and moderate income Americans. The following is testimony by Dr. LaDonna Pivetti, the director of the Center's Welfare Reform and Income Support Division. She discusses the safety net's response to the recession before the Budget Committee of the U.S. House of Representatives on December 9, 2009.
Thank you for inviting me. What I'd like to do today is focus my testimony on three points. And the first point is what role ARRA has played in keeping millions of individuals out of poverty and also in reducing hardship, among others. The second is that what I'd like to do is to really talk about the SNAP and the TANF program and contrast what has happened in those so that we understand which parts of the safety net are working and which are not. And then what I'd like to do is talk about the need for continued assistance and how we might think about moving forward, what still remains to be done. So first, talking about the impact of ARRA. The chairman mentioned and Congresswoman Moore both mentioned a study that the center did on looking at ARRA and its impact on poverty. We looked at seven provisions of the Recovery Act that provide income directly to individuals or families. And when we did that, we found that there are 6.2 million fewer people who are in poverty and 33 million who have less poverty than they would have. I think the important part of that is that not only did that have the impact of having less poverty, but it also provides income to people who are most likely to spend it. And what that does is it keeps the economy moving and it keeps people employed other than the people who are spending it. So I think that's sort of an important part of it's really doing two things at the same time. I think that the other part of the ARRA that I'd like to talk about is state fiscal relief. ARRA provided $140 billion in fiscal relief to states through two mechanisms, through enhanced funding for Medicaid and through the Fiscal Stabilization Fund, which was targeted primarily to education. And state fiscal relief helps to mitigate the recession through several different means. First, it helps states to maintain critical services. When states received the enhanced Medicaid funding, they were able to do two things. One is they were able to keep people employed who are in the Medicaid program and our health providers, and they also were able to keep eligibility at the levels that it would have been. So what we've seen is an increase or expected increase in Medicaid in people receiving Medicaid because there was a maintenance of effort to get that enhanced match. They couldn't reduce eligibility. So we see more people who are actually receiving assistance from that program than we would have otherwise. The other is that it helps avoid layoffs of public employees. And one thing I think that many of us see and are concerned about is in the education that has been especially true is that there are many teachers that would have been laid off that are not and are still in our schools. And then the other is it prevents the contraction of private sector economic activity, again, because that activity that supplies goods and services continues and it keeps the economy moving. And I think that it's important that economist Mark Zandi has found that state risk fiscal relief has a very high multiplier effect, and for every dollar spent by the federal government, it results in a $1.41 increase in the gross domestic product. The Department of Education found that more than 255,000 education jobs and nearly 63,000 jobs in other areas have been retained. I think one of the difficulties with some of that's happened in the stabilization, it's hard to count what has been retained rather than what has been added. But I think an important point of what ARRA has done is things are far less worse than they would have been had those provisions not been in place. Now, what I'd like to do is to talk about one last piece of the ARRA, which is the TANF Emergency Contingency Fund. And as Congresswoman Moore, again, mentioned, there's $5 billion available to states. And that money is very targeted so that it does go directly to families in need. It is a way to help states who have increases in their caseload meet those increased payments. It is allow states to provide emergency assistance to stave off crises so that it can help families to avoid foreclosure or if they're behind in their rent or their utility payments to avoid them from becoming homeless. And then to create new subsidized employment programs so that states really have been able to use this to maintain a work focus in their TANF programs, which otherwise would have been difficult. One example that I would like to do is just to give you a flavor of how states have used this is to use Oregon as an example. Oregon has been hit very hard by the recession. There's been a huge increase in the number of people who are unemployed. In their TANF program, they have been serving an additional 6,000 families a month. And they are expecting to draw down almost $75 million from the TANF Emergency Fund for 2009 and 2010. And without that additional funding, Oregon would have eliminated their TANF program for two-parent families, and they would have reduced eligibility for employment-related daycare, and they would have potentially had some other cuts to be able to account for some of meet some of their budget gaps. So they have been able to avoid all of those cuts. Families are continuing to receive assistance. And again, Oregon is an example where a program that is very work-focused was able to shift and provide a safety net for families who need it, and it also did it very quickly. On the subsidized employment, so far we have more than a dozen states that have received approval to create or expand their subsidized employment programs. And California, I think, is a good example, being a very large state. They're planning to draw down $300 million to create subsidized employment, and LA alone is planning to provide 10,000 jobs to people who would otherwise not have them. But there will be programs throughout the state. New York State is also spending about $53 million on subsidized employment, and that is a combination. What they've done is taken some of the ARRA funds, they've added some of their state funds so that they can create funds to do healthcare outreach, they can do green jobs, and they can provide, again, subsidized employment for people who otherwise would not be employed. So that, I think, is a good example of the ways in which the contingency fund is actually playing out in the states. Now what I'd like to do is turn and talk a little bit about the safety net's overall responsiveness to the recession. So we had programs in place prior to ARRA that were really intended to be a safety net for families. So I think sort of thinking long term, one thing we need to sort of ask ourselves is how well have those programs actually been working? And I think there is both a good news and a bad news story here. On the good news story, enrollment in the food stamp program, also known as SNAP now. National enrollment is an all-time high. Caseloads have increased by 30% since the beginning of the economic downturn, and they have increased in every state. So the food stamp program really has responded to the increased demand, and again, they have done so very quickly. The TANF story is a very different story. The TANF caseloads are starting to increase, but what happens is if you look at TANF nationally, there's been a very small increase. We actually looked from March 2008 to March 2009 in a preliminary analysis, and nationally you see an increase of about 5%. But if you look at that national increase, it really masked what's going on in the states. And there is this extreme variation of what's going on in the states. There are some states that have had very, very substantial increases in TANF caseloads above 25%. So again, Oregon being one of those, South Carolina is another. There are about six states that have had more than 15% increases. But there are more states where the caseload has either remained flat or is actually declining, was declining at the start of the recession, and has continued to decline. We have states that have caseloads declines that are at 10% or greater. And again, those have continued. So I think we need to sort of ask ourselves, why has TANF not been responsive, given that we know there is greater need? And I think there's a lot of reasons. We don't know all the details, but I think we can look and sort of draw some conclusions based on what we're seeing. One is that states for 13 years have been focusing on caseload decline. And they have really been slow to shift that focus. A measure of success for TANF was that the caseloads went down. The work participation rates really have discouraged states from serving people who can't get jobs quickly. And The easiest way to meet those work participation rates is not to serve people who can't be employed. And even in this economy, states are still concerned about how they will meet those rates. And it affects their behavior about who they serve and how they actually operate their programs. Many states have policies and procedures in place that make it very, very difficult for people to get onto assistance, and especially difficult if they can't demonstrate that they can work 40 hours a week and meet those work requirements. The other is that TANF does have a stigma attached to it for many families, and so there are some families who may need assistance who don't pursue it because of the stigma attached, because they don't know that they're eligible, and because of time limits that they may have already reached. The other thing that I think is important in looking at sort of what's happening in food stamp and TANF, one of the things we're seeing in food stamps is an increase in what we refer to as zero-income households. So they are households that have no other income. Those are, many of those families are families who historically or prior to reform would have been on TANF and are not on TANF. So, again, we have food stamp is providing the safety net, but food stamp cannot help people to pay their rent. It can't help them to pay sort of some of their basic, meet their basic needs. So, again, there is sort of a good side and a bad side story to that. Finally, what I'd like to do is to talk about strategies for how can we strengthen the safety net. And I'm going to talk about three. There's more in my testimony, and I'm going to focus on two that are short-term and one that is a longer-term. For the short-term, first is to provide additional funding to states to really help them with the administrative cost of providing food stamp benefits to individuals. One thing that has happened in states is trying to meet the demand and actually process those applications is creating just a huge problem administratively for states. And because of budget crises, people are being laid off even though there are more applications. So one thing that we could do to actually help states to meet that demand and to get benefits in the hands of people more quickly is to help them on the administrative side. The other second is to phase down state fiscal relief more gradually. When we consider how to provide a safety net for people, we shouldn't lose sight of the long-term consequences. If you look historically what has happened in recessions, unemployment generally recovers slowly and poverty recovers even more slowly. So that if we really believe that what has happened historically will continue to happen, the need is going to continue for an extended period of time. And we need to really sort of be prepared for thinking about that. So despite improvements in the economy and sort of the fiscal relief that states have received, the fiscal conditions in states look almost as bad in fiscal 2011 and 2012 as they did for 2009 and 2010. And the current recovery funds help them to take part of their gap and close that, but it is not going to go away. So our recommendation is to really think about how can we gradually decrease the amount of money that goes to states, but not put them in a position where they will have to close those gaps quickly and be unable. We know that states have already started to plan their budgets so that it's important to do something quickly. And we know that without additional fiscal relief, many of the services that have been helpful to families will be cut. States have already indicated that if the FMAP doesn't continue, that they will start to cut back eligibility so that they can, again, meet their budget requirements. Finally, on the longer term, is really thinking about how can we use TANF reauthorization, which comes up next year, to really improve TANF's responsiveness to economic downturn and also to improve its performance as a work program. I think that TANF is a very different program than when we instituted reform, and I think it requires a different discussion about what comes next. And I think that we would be remiss if we didn't use the opportunity that is coming up to really take a step back and say, where has it performed well and where is it falling short and how can we make it a safety net that really is for the long term and really can deal with the ups and downs of people's lives as they happen. So in just summary, what I'd like to do is just to say that the stimulus has provided important help to both states and to individuals, and both of those mechanisms of getting money in the hands of poor people who will spend it is an important way to help the economy to recover, as well as states to help them to provide important services. And second, is that we really need to be thinking about this as a long term. It is not going to go away in the short term. And so we need to really be thinking about what's the path, long-term path to recovery, so we don't lose ground from what we've already accomplished. And I'll stop there.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. You can follow us on Twitter at Center on Budget, find us on Facebook, or create a My Center account at centeronbudget.org.